Of what might happen to you as a result of making these revelations?
Oh, yes. I probably am a dead man already.
They think they're living in a police state.
Once upon a time, there were these people in Europe called pilgrims, and they were afraid of being persecuted. So they all got in a boat and sailed to the New World where they wouldn't have to be scared ever again.
I loves my gun,
and I don't mean no money like I work at Walmart and make no money.
So enjoy yourself, or I'll come looking for you. There and veg out in front of your TV and enjoy what these fine people are giving you, which is maximum entertainment. You understand what I'm saying about? And don't you ever, ever, ever forget what it's like without TV. Because before TV, people just sat and played with themselves all night.
I loves my gun. Loves my gun.
Recorded April 19th, 2012. Welcome back to Rangers A to Z. This is Iron Angel, and this episode is Rangers A to Z, Episode 12, Signs. So what this episode is going to be about is signaling communication, as well as the signs from things like the Rangers logo, or the Rangers A to Z logo, sorry. And I will go through and explain a whole lot of the kind of hidden meanings in some of those things, and maybe get you a few clues on looking for hidden meanings and other things as we go. Let's first start with the Rangers A to Z logo. It's on Facebook. On if you look up R4NGER5 space A, the number 2 and letter Z, you'll find it there. It's also in the Rant Radio schedule page. You go to rantmedia.ca, click on Rant Radio Talk, and then the schedule button. You'll find it's way down at the bottom on Saturday nights. Of the two, probably the Facebook one's easier to see, but a lot of people don't use Facebook, and I understand that. It's, that's a whole other show, whole other topic. What you'll notice first about that logo is, since Rangers A to Z is based in America, we use the American flag. The big difference is there are two really notable things about it that a lot of people haven't really caught. A few people have sent messages and said, hey, you know, what's up with this? The first one is that the logo, the flag is inverted. And it's not meant as a sign of disrespect. A lot of people think it's a sign of disrespect. It's not. It's a distress call. Back in naval days, in tall ships days, flying your country's flag inverted meant you were basically in distress in some way or another. There were pirates on board, or you were adrift, or something like that. In the case of flags like the Union Jack that don't have a discernible upside down, you tie a knot in the flag. You run it down the yardarm and tie a big knot in it, and then run it back up. You'll also occasionally see the American flag tied in a knot in some old photographs. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know it's out there somewhere. There was something like an embassy under siege or something like that, perhaps in Iran, 1979, where the flag was both inverted and tied in a knot to indicate to people who could see it from a distance that there was distress and there was a need for aid. And that's what that meant. And the reason I chose it for the Rangers A to Z logo is the show is meant to give aid. It's meant to help you get through everyday emergencies and possibly give you some of the skills and tools needed to deal with even larger things as they come along. Hopefully you'll never have to, but life is often a little more adventurous and chaotic than we'd planned for. The more tools, the more skills you have, the more things you can get through easily, not be afraid, not be overwhelmed, and not give up. So basically, the main reason that I used the inverted flag was because it was basically there to indicate that we're trying to render aid, and at the same time that, you know, we as a people do need aid. We need each other. We need to help each other. We need to teach each other and spread what we know, be it skills, be it techniques, be it just a mental mindset on how to deal with everyday emergencies and larger things. Every spring in the American Midwest, we get big tornadoes, huge thunderstorms roll through, and tornadoes will tear stuff up. Once in a great while, you'll still see some old vet go out and run their flag up inverted if they need aid. Anymore, that particular distress call is getting to be less and less common. You're not seeing it anywhere near as much as you used to. I think it might still be used in shipping quite a bit, but I'm not sure about many other cases. And a lot of people aren't even taught that. We had a really interesting case here in town where I live. There was a fellow who was just kind of being a jerk. And he was flying his flag inverted, had been for about 3 days, and a friend of mine who was an old vet happened to mention that he was angry about it. I says, well, okay, maybe he needs something, you know, maybe he needs help. And so, sorry about that, I got a cold. And so he had the flag up in the front yard, and we knew his car was in the driveway, so a bunch of us went down there. I and a group of other folks, and went down, knocked on the door, and you know, because I'm, you know, kind of the big, kind of weird-looking guy, I got up in the front of the line and knocked on the door and said, what can we help you with? What? You know, the guy answers the door and says, what? I don't know what you mean. Well, you're flying the flag inverted, which is a distress sign. What is your distress? What do you need? And he looks around. There's about, there's probably 8-10 guys there. A lot of big old vets and a couple big Indians and things like that. And he wasn't quite sure what was going on or what to say. I says, look, you've got your flag inverted. That's a distress call. These people recognize it as such. We've come to aid you. What do you need? What can we help you with? Well, I was just doing it just to be funny. So we had a little discussion. You know, we weren't jerks about it or anything like that. But we pointed out to him that, you know, that was not necessarily the best way to be funny. I've seen some people do it as a sign they feel that the country's in trouble. And, you know, looking at our economic situation, looking at a lot of the social situations in our country, we do have some issues that we need to deal with. And hopefully, you know, some of the folks out there listening are trying to help out in their local community. If you see somebody flying a flag inverted, that that could mean a number of things. They could be basically making social commentary. They, you know, they could have other things going on. So, you know, go up, knock on the door and say, hey, what do you need? What's going on there? Some people will do it just to be jerks and don't really know what it means. So, you know, go up and very, very friendly educate them. Don't be intimidating. Don't be a jerk. Don't show up with a baseball bat or anything like that. Just go and knock on the door and say, hey, you're flying a distress flag. What can we do for you? And if it's political or social commentary, that kind of thing, suggest maybe they get involved, get involved in the community, change things from a basic level. If you don't like the way your local government's running things, run for office. Get in there and do it yourself. You know, get some friends together and get them to run for office. If you don't like the way things are going on a political level, on a higher level, get involved. Get out, you know, get into the situation and try and change it. Certainly, it's not an easy thing to change. Some people have said it's a great deal like trying to turn the Titanic. But you know what? If you get enough warning and enough people leaning in that wheel, you can go around it. So, the other thing you'll note about our particular logo is there's a, in the right-hand side, there's a blood drop coming down off from the red line. That is indicative, that is basically a symbol of sacrifice. That's what the red bars in the American flag actually mean, is sacrifice. And that doesn't necessarily mean go out and you know, get yourself killed, get yourself injured. It certainly means exactly not that. What that means is give up some time, give up a little something to help out others. A little sacrifice on your behalf can be a huge, huge benefit on someone else's behalf. You know, a little old lady alongside the road with a flat tire in the rain, okay, you're going to get wet. So what? Change tire for her. You might be late for going to get groceries or whatever you're doing. So what? At the same time, you know, it's a situation where you've helped someone else. You've given a little sacrifice and made a huge difference in someone else's life. That said, you know, this show isn't really a sacrifice for me. It's not difficult for me to sit down and do this show. I record it whenever I get a chance to. I get a few minutes here and there and sit down and just kind of yammer on for an hour and get it all rendered and thrown up on the server and out so you guys can listen to it. But I do other things, too, that we were not going to discuss here. And, you know, and really, that's another thing. You know, don't expect to get anything out of a sacrifice. Don't expect to get anything out of helping out. Yes, sometimes you do get stuff back. Sometimes you get back some really amazing stuff. That little old lady that you changed the tire on may show up at your door with a homemade pie someday. Can't complain about that at all. There's been cases where that's happened to me where, you know, someone I helped out years ago comes back and they become really good friends sometimes. Sometimes they'll still just hate the crap out of you, but they'll look at you differently, you know, because they come from a different social background or a different kind of mentality, and they don't necessarily understand you or your background or what you're into. But they may look at you and go, you know, okay, so maybe these people aren't so bad. A lot of my friends are bikers, and a lot of the general everyday folk are kind of concerned by them. They're a little freaked out by, you know, these big hairy guys on these really loud machines and that kind of stuff. And they don't know about things like Toys for Tots. The bikers get together and round up an awful lot of Toys for Tots. They'll go on rides and collect toys and just generally try and make some unfortunate kids' lives better. You know, they make things a little more fun for them, make their childhood a little better. Because, you know, most of these guys have got kids, and most of these guys, you know, have had a rough life at some point. And they understand. They know. You know, so anytime you can help somebody else out, in any way you can help somebody else out, it's definitely worth doing. If nothing else, just because it helps you as a person. We're kind of wired funny. I know that a lot of people don't realize this, but when you help someone, you get a good feeling. That's because we're wired to do that. It also helps us deal with a lot of other issues down the road that we're not readily aware of. What'll happen is, as you start helping more and more people out, more people are willing to help you out. So, you know, let's say you're the one alongside the road with a blown tire and you don't have a spare. You never know. Somebody that you helped out down, you know, 3-4 years ago may see you standing there and show up and either give you a ride or actually have a spare tire that fits your car or whatever. You know, you just never quite know. So that's what that's about. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's get into the rest of the information about signs. And signs is really about distress signals. First thing to be said is don't use a distress signal when you're not really in... Sorry about that. My chair is being noisy. Don't use a distress signal when you're not in imminent danger. I can speak English, I swear. Imminent danger. In some areas, it may actually be against the law to go out and put up a what's understood as a discernible distress signal if you're just, you know, out screwing around and or you can't remember where you put the remote or something like that. Kind of like the people that call 911 to complain because they only got 9 McNuggets at McDonald's. Instead of going up and talking to the manager and having the manager deal with it, they call the police. Well, that's really kind of a waste of the resources and time of the police force. The more you can deal with yourself, the better, really. But when you hit a point where you're in imminent danger or someone is seriously injured, that kind of stuff, that's the time you need a distress signal. The things that are really critical are you need an alert that lets people know there's distress in progress and a position, some way to locate a group in distress. Like, for example, with ships, they use aerial flares. You'll typically see an aerial flare fired up off a small fishing boat, but the problem is they don't last very long. So quite often what will happen is they will fire an aerial flare, then they'll fire a handheld flare on the deck, like a road flare, and hold that up on the deck, often wave it back and forth so that they can find people. In most cases, ships and things like that also have some sort of electronic distress signal. So sometimes they'll wait until they can hear a rescue helicopter coming to fire the flare or that kind of thing. The one that you're probably going to recognize almost immediately is the SOS signal. In the opening of Rangers A to Z, there's Morse code, and that basically spells out our name, Rangers A to Z. But you'll also hear Morse code, which is SOS. That can be either light flashes or sounds. Typically, you've got a number of different noise-making methods available to you whenever you're in just about any situation. You can do the SOS sound by banging on pots and pans if you need to. Unfortunately, people are less and less knowledgeable about Morse code, although there are now more ham radio operators active than ever before, 700,000 in the U.S. alone, I believe. Another thing you'll see, particularly on vessels, once they've sent out a Morse code signal via radio and they might have flashed it out, is either a red flare or orange smoke. Orange smoke is usually a distress also. If you're not on a vessel, if you're on land, sometimes you'll see, or hear, I should say, someone firing a gun or some other explosive at intervals of about a minute, just repeatedly. The problem is sometimes when you're in an area where there's a shooting range, it can be mistaken for just someone sighting a rifle or something like that. So that one could be harder to track down and harder to use as a method of communication. If you can go out, you know, to some place where you can be seen, like up on a hilltop or something like that, and you raise and lower your arms outstretched to each side repeatedly, that's also a common distress signal. Let's see, there are a whole bunch of other methods. If you go to wikipedia.org and look up distress signals, you'll find a whole long list there, which also explains about search and rescue transponders, emergency position indicating radio beacons, and a number of other radio systems that are basically a GPS transponder that sends out a Mayday signal. Mayday, there's one. Mayday is a message that consists of the word Mayday spoken three times in succession. That's a distress signal that basically tells everybody else on the channel to hush up. We need to get this information out. Quite often in places where you've got a lot of fishing vessels, it'll get relayed along. Here on the Great Lakes, people that listen in on the maritime radio on shore sometimes will end up calling the Coast Guard. I know that if you ever watch the show Deadliest Catch, which takes place out in the Bering Sea, you'll occasionally see a Mayday relayed back through. What'll happen is they'll say, Mayday, 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 and then they'll go through and explain the name of the vessel, the position of the vessel, which is quite often last known or estimated in latitude and longitude, because quite often they're drifting or they're not 100% sure they're caught in a storm or something like that. They will go through and explain the nature of the distress condition, if they're drifting, if the ship's on fire, if they're aground, if they're, you know, adrift in hazardous waters, whatever. Number of persons and injuries on board, type of assistance being sought, and any of the details that facilitates resolution of the emergency, such as they're going to abandon ship, they're going to pump flood water, what have you. Here in the Great Lakes, we occasionally will also see a white high-intensity strobe on the mast that flashes once a second. Sometimes you'll see marker die, but it's not that common. There's usually a yellow and red flag man overboard buoy. If a ship loses a crew member or something, they'll drop a buoy about where that person is while they either slow down or turn around, that kind of thing. So smaller ships that are more agile and things like that can get up into the area and start searching for a man overboard. And you'll sometimes see the man overboard buoy mistaken for a diver's buoy too. So if you're gonna be a boater, if you're gonna get into boating, definitely go through and learn the different buoys, what the different flags mean. Flag communication is still used very heavily in boating today, and so it's absolutely worth learning to use. And I should have noted on SOS and didn't. It doesn't actually stand for anything. A lot of people think it means save our ship. It's actually just that it's a really readily identifiable sound. Three short dots, three long dashes, three short dots, all sent as a single string. I don't believe that shows up in very many words. And when they were doing the discussions about Morse transaction, most of those words wouldn't be sent anyway. Things like sousaphone, and so on and so forth. You don't normally get that kind of those kinds of words, so that's a very noticeable, very immediate thing. And from that, I don't know if it was so much from that, but definitely threes come up an awful lot in distress calls. For example, when you're in the woods, if you're lost with a broken leg, it's three long blasts and a whistle, wait a minute, three long blasts and a whistle, and wait for basically you're waiting for response in that minute. The threes thing comes up quite a bit. For example, in the mountains, if I recall correctly, they suggest you build three fires separated by about 6 to 10 feet so that it can be seen from a distance that it's three separate fires. And that indicates that you need some sort of emergency assistance. Piles of stones on a beach, if you're shipwrecked, three piles of stones or spell out SOS. Or even spell out the Morse, you know, three dots, three dashes, three dots. So threes definitely come back in quite a bit. If a helicopter comes in sight, this is going by memory. You'll have to go back through and fact check me on this one because I could be wrong with this. When a helicopter comes up on sight, we get them here quite a bit. So I'm probably right on this because I've actually been through this a couple times. The helicopter will circle you, basically trying to see if you need aid or not. If you stand with your feet together and raise your arms into the shape of a capital letter Y, it's an indicator for yes. If you stand with one arm down, one arm up, it's basically showing an N for no, I don't need aid, and then the helicopter will go on looking for another person. You could do it with semaphore flags as well, but semaphore is a whole other alphabet that you'd have to learn. But those two communications alone should get you pretty much anywhere you need to go with dealing with a helicopter in basic rescue situations. Yes is the critical one if you need help. And a bit more trivia on SOS. It superseded CQD, which was used by the British Navy quite a bit, which was actually stood for Come Quick Danger or Come Quick Distress, something of that nature. I believe it was the SOS was both used in both at the same time, SOS and CQD. I can talk, I really can. When the Titanic went down, it sent out CQD along with its identifying letters, MGY, and Phillips, the radio operator, kept going through and interspersing his calls with SOS. I believe, reading on a boatsafe.com about SOS, the first American use of SOS was in August 1909 by wireless operator T.D. Hobner of the SS Arapaho. He radioed for help when his ship lost its screw near Diamond Shoals, sometimes called the Graveyard of the Atlantic, the screw being the propeller. The call was heard from United Wireless Station HA at Hatteras. A few months later, the SS Arapaho received an SOS distress call from the SS Iroquois. Radio Officer Hobner, therefore, has the distinction of being involved in the first two incidents of the use of SOS in America, first as the sender and second as the receiver. The U.S. did not officially adopt SOS until 1912, being slow to adopt international wireless standards. Now, I'm not sure of the validity of this statement. It could be true, it might not be. You'd have to do some research if you're really curious on your own. But it might make for a good little piece of trivia, if nothing else. Now, so far, most of the communication methods we've discussed have been relatively primitive and relatively simple. They'll work without batteries, they'll work without any kind of special equipment. obviously you have to have a means to start a fire to do the fires kind of thing, or some sort of radio or whistle or noise-making device for SOS, that kind of stuff. But as we get into higher-tech things, there's a lot of different devices, like the emergency radio transponders we discussed a little earlier. And, of course, cell phones. The problem is cell phones don't always have signal. If they do, great. It doesn't hurt to call 911 wherever you are. Most places, here's something to be very aware of. When you call 911, most cell phones will go into GPS mode and will attempt to identify where you are. This does not always work. Try and get some bearings on what's around you. Get some very big noticeable landmarks. For example, I know of a case in our area where there are five or six very large flags. Some people will call 911 to identify an accident along the highway. And in that given area, there's two major highways that come together, and you can see several of these big car dealership flags from those highways in a number of different locations. So they're not necessarily a very good landmark. Whereas if you see a water tower that has a name on it, you know for sure that that water tower is only in one location. If you can find a landmark to give to people coming to give you distress or give you aid in your time of distress that is really identifiable. You know, we saw a restaurant up the road that had a giant fiberglass cow head on the front of it about a mile and a half back. That's helpful. They know roughly where you are. The better directions you can give them, the sooner they can get to you to aid you. For example, if you're on a divided highway, tell them, are you on the northbound or southbound lanes? Yeah, some years back we came up on an accident and called it in. I got out to check the driver of the vehicle. Astonishingly, she was absolutely fine, wasn't harmed in any way. She had hit a railing, deflected off, went through another rail, completely through the steel rail, up into the trees, broke a couple of pretty substantial trees. The airbag deployed in her car, so she was completely fine, thankfully. The funniest thing about that particular encounter was the first thing she said to me when we got out of the car is, she says, "Do you think we can fix this?" No, I really don't. You know, considering the engine is over there and the hood is back in that tree, you know, you're just lucky to be alive. Oh, geez, it's a loner. You know, so I kind of felt bad for that. But we had very good directions, and it made it very easy for emergency services to get out on scene. We really figured she was going to need an ambulance. So, you know, my wife was riding with me, and she called and said, you know, we are at between this mile marker and this mile marker, because we had seen the mile marker just not too long ago, and we knew about where we were. And we are, you know, we're right at this overpass. You know, we were just before a specific overpass. And so things like overpasses on a highway are very good landmarks, because usually they tell you what the road is that goes over. Not always, but in many cases, there's a sign on that says what that road is. This was just a case where the road went over but didn't actually have a connection. So, you know, it wasn't like we were at a given exit or between the ramps and a given exit or something like that. But if you can tell them we are on the median section of the southbound lanes of, you know, U.S. highway whatever, interstate whatever, that's certainly very helpful. The more information you can give, the better. Obviously, the more calm you can be, the better. We've talked about this before. Panicking doesn't really help you any. And it's certainly a sign from your body that you're in duress. But it's one of the signs from your body that you need to tell it, okay, I know that. We need to get through this first. We can panic later. There's plenty of time for freaking out when everything's fixed. So if at all possible, when you need to call for distress, and I hope you never do, and I really hope that no one that you love in your life never has to, but should you need to, should you be in a situation where you need to call for a wrecker because you skidded off in the ice or something like that, try and get as good of directions as you possibly can. I'm somewhere alongside the road between two cities that are 50 miles apart. Doesn't really help them. I also know that in some cases, a lot of people will call. Sometimes you'll get one accident where 15 or 20 people call in the accident, and you'll get quite a bit of different information on where they are depending on the people calling in, and they could believe there's multiple accidents out there. And sometimes there is. When you get a really icy road, for example, you'll get three or four slide-offs in a couple of miles. And so sometimes you will have people calling in to say, yeah, there's a car back in the trees at mile marker 5, and someone else will call and says, a car back in the trees at mile marker 7. And then they have to figure out, is that the same one and someone was just wrong in a location, or are there actually two cars off the road there? So the more information you can pass along, the better. Before we go to music, there's one last thing I want to add into signs. I strongly suggest you add into your cell phone an entry titled, in case of emergency. Put it in as ICE, ICE, and then after that a space, and spell out in case of emergency. Quite often, if you're unconscious in a emergency situation, first responders are trained to look at your cell phone, or some are. I don't know if all areas do this or not, but I know that in our area there's been some training to do this. To pick up your cell phone, open it up, and search for ICE. And that number should be your spouse, your parents, someone like that. And you can enter more than one number, ICE1, ICE2, and absolutely certainly worth doing. Hopefully you'll never use it. There's a possibility that that you'll never need it. And update it. You know, if your parents get a new cell phone and the number changes, don't just change it under your mom's setting. Go back in and fix your in case of emergency setting also. I know that in some places the entry is something else, and I can't for the life of me remember right now what's often used in other locations. Some parts of Central Europe have a different entry, and I can't recall what it is. In America and Southern Canada, I believe ICE is fairly universal. So definitely do some investigation in your area. Check and see if that's what they use in your area. Because obviously, if emergency responders in your area have not been trained to use that, say you're in France or Germany, someplace like that, isn't worth using the slot up on for something they're not going to look for. So whatever the term happens to be locally for in case of emergency, put that in there and have a connection so that they can, you know, someone can notify your family and friends if something goes wrong. And it also comes in handy if you lose your cell phone. Quite often, if you lose a cell phone, people will check for the emergency contact and call that person and say, hey, I have a cell phone. I don't know who it belongs to. So look on your phone and see who it came up as, and let's get this back to them. So I'm going to go to a music track here. I have no idea what, of course, but I'll find something and stick in. And then when I come back, we've pretty much wrapped this one up fairly well. I'll probably think of something I'll have to stick in there, but otherwise, what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop in the remaining leftover audio from Bjorn Comes to Visit. I can't remember exactly how long that is, but it's probably 20 minutes or so of just us goofing around, and hopefully get a good laugh out of that. As always, feel free to stop by rangers.com, that's R4NGER5.com, or rantmedia.ca. Poke around there, have a look. Thanks very much, Sim, for having us on. Thank you very much for listening. Feel free to share. This is a free podcast, free to share, free to distribute. Download, put it on your MP3 player or what have you. Iron Angel off here for now. We'll see what comes up for music.
In the cold days of February, tucked in a small studio, in a dark and twisted desert, sits a beard, and behind it, the face of the future. Embark with us on a journey so ridiculous, so completely badass, I didn't even ask how much they're paying me. It has Toyota Priuses, India Pale Ales, Roundhouse Kicks, Wobbles, Explosions, Synthesizers, giant fighting robots from outer space, mannequins with nunchucks, helicopters that fly underwater, carrier signal, mischief and mayhem. the album.
And that was Carrier Signal, which I think you can find on AloneTone.com. Just search for Carrier Signal when you get there. And I think he's got a couple albums up. That was, what one was that? That was Mischief and Mayhem, Intro and Rock the Party. The first two tracks off from his most recent RPM album from February of 2012. So, let's see. I couldn't come up with anything else. I'm sure there's something. Just as soon as I hit render and get ready to send this up to the servers, I'll come up with a dozen more things that need to be in signals. But for now, what I'm going to do is take some of the audio that was left over. We just, Bjorn and I just tangented off and got way too gung-ho, recorded about an hour and 20 minutes worth of stuff. And then tried to cram it into an hour on the show where we first kind of introduced him and went through and explained how we know each other and some of the things we did together. So what I'm going to do is take out that hunk of audio that was left out and add that in here. Hope you enjoy that. Hope you learned something from this episode. Hopefully there's something funny in the next little bit. And you'll notice the audio signal changes, the audio quality changes some. It was recorded with a different set of mics in a different room, so hopefully it's still legible and you can understand it. Have a good time. Talk at you again soon. Well, let's see. What other craziness have we dealt with that we can talk about? Because there's been a lot of stuff that isn't really a family show kind of stuff we've had to deal with.
Right.
You know, because once people find out you're competent, they'll come to you with some really weird problems.
Yeah, be it God, just about anything, really. I mean, there's that one guy that came up there talking about some weirdness with, was it blood magic or something like that?
All kinds. Yeah, we get all kinds of
bizarre stuff like that.
We get all kinds of screwy stuff.
But, you know, just, I don't know. After a while, it starts to make your head hurt, and you're wondering how these people manage to survive as long as they have.
Yeah. Yeah. It honestly, because we do this in a tent, it makes us a lot more aware of how civilized, I don't think it's the right word I want, domesticated we've become as a people. We had a guy come up, you'll remember this one, we had a guy come up and say, well, I need some tent stakes for my tent. Okay, what do you need? About this long, he holds his fingers about 8 inches apart. And he says, I think I need them about 3/8. You got a dome tent? Well, I got a tent like yours. My tent is an 18 by 24, 14 foot tall marquee. My canvas alone weighs about 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And once you start wind loading it, that canvas ends up weighing... at one point, there were... I and the girls were trying to set up in Ludington, and we had about a 30-mile-an-hour wind. That canvas ended up weighing almost a ton because of wind loading.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I was in good solid ground. I've got good stakes. And I says, okay, are these, you know, for the bottom edge of your wall? No, these are for holding up my main ropes. What makes you think you need, you know, this little bit? Well, I have the plastic stakes I got from the store, but I keep breaking them. But you keep breaking them because they're not strong enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, the wind is creating a great deal of strain on that. So we go down and look. Not only does he have these little pathetic stakes on a really big piece of canvas, he's using clothesline. I don't know if you... Do you remember this one?
Yeah, I remember this one.
I think this is the first year you were there.
Yeah,
he's using clothesline
as his ropes
and stuff. And he can't figure out why they keep breaking and the tent keeps falling over. Now, when a dome tent falls, and that's one thing, when you've got something this big above you and it's got a big heavy beam up in the top of it, having that thing come down, not so much fun.
No.
Or worse, having a tree come down on top of it or something.
Yeah.
The only time I've ever had my stakes fail, we used to do Penzic, which is a SCA event out in Pennsylvania. We had record rainfall, and they had just laid a new road in, this gravel and I don't know, cement maybe something road, that divided the formerly smooth hill face with a drain on the other side from us. So in the middle of the night, I woke up. Something didn't seem right. We've been in the middle of a pretty good storm. We knew the storm was coming. We battened down the hatches and all of our stuff was in plastic tubs. And we were, you know, we were okay. We were ready to go. But something didn't seem right. I woke up and I kind of became aware that the wall was closer than it should be. And I opened one eye and I looked up at it, and there's the roof right above my head. That's not normal.
Mm-mm.
All right, something has gone wrong. A rope is broken. Something is amiss.
Right.
My roof is now bagged in and is holding, you know, a couple hundred gallons of water on top of the roof. And I'm going, ooh, that's an issue. And so I swing out of bed and I land ankle deep in water, running water, cold running water, which wakes you up fast.
Yeah.
And well, it turns out they were getting record rainfall. And we were in the midst of basically the tail end of a hurricane coming through. And because the road was now funneling the water down the hill instead of letting it fan out and go to the drain, we were in a raging river. And the ground had liquefied. So instead of my stakes being driven into ground, my stakes were driven into basically quicksand.
Yeah.
And so all the stakes on one side had actually pulled out. So we had to... And here's a good camping trick for you. In this situation, it's really loud, I'm sure. In this situation, or in a camping situation where you're dealing with really soft ground, you lay dead men in. You basically tie your ropes around a 2x4 and bury it in the ground.
Yep.
And that was what we did, and it worked great. Never got that 2x4 back.
Oh, yeah. Just that 2x4, goodbye.
Well, it was really bad there because it was that caliche clay stuff with gravel mixed into it.
Yeah.
So trying to dig it back out was just a nightmare. I had some extra rope with me, though, so we basically made rope loops that came up out of the ground, and when we left, we just cut them off flush, and good enough. Of course, I got the same space a couple years later and ended up driving a stake through that stupid 2x4. Here's another trick. If you have square stakes, you hit the stake on the side of the... This only works with steel stakes. If you do it on plastic, they're going to break. You hit it on the side of the head so the stake rotates. It'll come up out of the ground a lot easier, unless you drove it through a rut or a 2x4.
Yep.
In which case, you have to spin it a couple of times to get it to come up out. At some point, we'll do a whole camping show with all the weird camping show tricks that I know, because there's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years of living in a tent for a couple weeks a year. I know that V has covered a little bit in Back of Beyond, and I'm sure there's some other stuff out there. You know, anywhere on YouTube, there's tons of camping stuff on YouTube.
Right.
So you can find information on it. It's not hard to get information. Getting the weird little tricks is where the fun is. And there's some old common sense stuff. Honestly, one of the best sources of camping information there is just came into the public domain. Scouting for Boys.
Original Scout Manual. About that, yeah. Yep,
just this year came into public domain. And a lot of those little tricks are in there, you know, hanging your food from a line off a tree so that raccoons and possum and bears and whatnot can't get into it.
Well, I was watching Survivor Man the other night, and one of the things that he was doing, he was in the tropics on an island, and he used a nylon tote bag to collect water in from the rainfall, and he had it on the ground. And one of the things I kept thinking is how come he didn't suspend that from a tree or a couple of trees, because the whole island is full of ship rats. And kept worrying about
the
rats getting into it and contaminating his water. And since he didn't have nothing to decon his water with, I kept wondering, why is he just keeping this on the ground and not suspending it from the trees?
Yeah, it'd be a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, they might run down the rope, but the chances are less.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Anything you can do to up your odds is always worth it.
Right.
What's the old statement? If you're in a fair fight, your tactics suck.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a fair fight.
And that really applies versus nature.
Yeah.
You know, nature don't play fair.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Well, it's like I told you about sleeping out in the Mojave before, didn't I?
I don't think you did.
We were in NTC, and we were doing 24-hour ops, and we're out at an observation point.
First off, you have to explain for the people who aren't military, NTC.
It's the National Training Center in California, about 30-some miles south of Barstow. And we were out in this duny area of the Mojave doing a observation point, and didn't have our cots with us because we left them back at base, but did have my sleeping bag, and Humvees are... by no stretch of the imagination, comfortable. So me and my bright idea was...
They're not like the civilian versions at all.
So me and my bright idea was, I got my sleeping bag, I'll go to the top of this dune and go to sleep. Well, I woke up at the bottom of the dune, buried up to my shoulders in sand.
No, you didn't tell me about that. Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah, well, sand is not pleasant to sleep in. It's part of the reason why I dislike sand now. Yeah, I would have been better off trying to get up on the roof and sleeping on the roof of the Humvee than actually sleeping in the sand. Not to mention when I woke up and thinking, oh yeah, this wasn't a bright idea because I'm having to check myself for bugs and whatnot too.
Scorpions.
Yeah, spiders, whatever else. So, and snakes.
Yeah. You hear a lot of stories about, in the Old West, guys would dump their boots out in the morning.
Yep.
Because snakes or bugs and stuff would crawl in. We used to take, at the end of the night when we were done cooking and stuff, we'd take our tripod, drive our tripod stakes in the ground, and put your boots upside down on them.
Yep.
Because that really helps. You didn't have to worry about anything living in there.
Yeah.
Well, we thought that. And then one morning I was over at friend's camp, and he'd said in the middle of the night, one of those little bark spiders had crawled up the post into his boot.
Right.
And was in the eye of the loop on the tripod, when he took the boot off, was just kind of standing there going, "You don't see me, you don't see me."
Right.
And he says, "Yeah, that was kind of a surprise." So, because the bark spider is not a fun thing to get bit by.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, I really don't know of any spider that's really fun to get bit by.
I got bit by a brown recluse some years ago on the forehead, and I still got a nice hole from it. And I'll tell you what, man, my whole head swelled up.
Oh, wow.
You know, it swells your eyes shut. You can't really explain that to somebody until they've had it. You don't want it. It's not a lot of fun.
I seen a guy that was bitten by a brown recluse when I was at Fort Hood. He was bit right in the crook of the elbow, and it managed to tunnel all the way up his shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not fun.
It's a necrotic poison. It's rough.
Well, it's just the way I was telling you about getting bit by a camel spider and how lucky I got off of that.
Yeah, you got bit by a camel spider. I mean, that's one of the things we didn't cover was...
Yeah. I mean, I still got the scar from it.
Yeah, it's a notable scar. It's probably, what, not quite the size of a dime.
No, it started out about that size, but yeah, it's about half the size now.
And, you know, if you're having problems staying awake at home and you've never seen one of these before, Google camel spider. You probably won't sleep for a while after that.
Yeah.
They are not small, and they are not friendly.
No. No.
Another buddy of mine was stationed in Kuwait. Went out to check the vehicles one night, and felt something brush up against him. Looked down, there was a camel spider standing on his boot.
Yeah.
He jumps back, emptied his weapon. He had his sidearm with him, his 9mm with him. Emptied his weapon, was trying to get the next magazine into the weapon when his team leader got out there. "What are you shooting at?" "Camel spider, camel spider, camel spider." "Not anymore." He had drilled it.
Oh, he got it.
Oh, yeah, several times.
Nice.
And, okay, since we're telling other people's stories, oh, this is a good one. I kind of hope Bear's listening. I know I'm going to butcher this story. My buddy Bear is a big guy. Great fellow. Real pleasant demeanor, you know. And he married a Southern girl, or was going to marry a Southern girl. I don't know exactly how this all panned out. I can't remember anymore. They went down to meet the family. And so the guy said, "Well, all right. You need to go through a little initiation."
Oh, joy.
Okay. Get in the boat. And there's a big kind of, square man-made lake they've got here on the property. And standing up in one corner of the lake is a single tree grows up out of the water. All right. Don't really know what we're doing here, but okay. They all get in the boat, and they hand Bear this little .22 pistol. "So, all right, boy, we're going to pull out that tree. You find yourself a target. You stay on that target until we say now. You don't shoot before then." Okay. And they go pulling out across this little pond. And the pond is shallow. You know, it's only a couple feet deep.
Right.
You know, he's using a pole that's probably only 10 foot long. And he's not that deep in the water. So, you know, Bear knows he's not going to drown here. As they get close to the tree, it's this kind of weird, lumpy-looking tree, and he starts to realize that's not all tree.
Right.
The tree is covered in moccasins.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Poisonous water moccasins are lounging in this tree. And so, you know, he's got the pistol, and he takes aim, and they keep pulling. And his arm keeps going further and further up until it's straight up, and they're under the tree.
Right.
At this point, one guy yells now and everybody starts shooting. And the moccasins just rain down out of this tree.
Jeez.
And they're under it.
Yeah.
You know, so they're landing the boat and, you know, all over the place, and Barry is just losing his mind. And, you know, basically moccasins hit the boat and decide, "We don't want to be here. You know, these guys don't like us." And they you know, hit the water and take off.
Right.
And they round up all the dead moccasins and stuff. And cook them. You know, they take them back to shore and they cook them, and they're, you know, they're laughing and joking about the Yankee, and yeah, the Yankee did all right. So that night, you know, Bear's still a little freaked out by this. That night they tell him, "All right, boy, you got to go out and check the boat, make sure the boat's secure." And they give him the 22 and a flashlight again. Mm-hmm. Well, the flashlight batteries are dead. So he gets down by the water, and it's kind of dark. He can see a little bit from the light up by the house, but not much. And the moon's out, but it's kind of overcast, and it's not real bright. And he's down by the boat, and he feels something brush against his leg. Bear whips out the pistol and takes a single shot. And they all come running down. You know, they're laughing and joking and stuff. And the old dad of the family shines his flashlight down. And he says, "Boy, you owe me a new boat rope." Bear managed to shoot and cut the anchor rope.
Nice.
At which point they stop screwing with him because it turns out he's a pretty good shot.
Right.
But, yeah, boy, you owe me a new boat rope.
That's funny.
Yeah. So that's probably it for this episode. So we'll get that one banged out.
Shot the boat.
I didn't shoot the boat. Just the rope. So.
Yeah.
So there we have it. Bjorn and I, a little bit more leftover stuff. Thanks for your time. Thanks for listening. Feel free to share this. Feel free to join us on Rangers A to Z again next week, same time, same channel, or download it from our main mirror site. That's r4nger5.com. We're going out with another Carrier Signal track, and this is Spectral Levitation from Mischief and Mayhem.
It's over to the sheep.